Shall we turn now to Genesis chapter 40 as we continue our study through the Bible? Genesis chapter 40. And it came to pass after these things, after what things? After Pharaoh's wife had falsely accused Joseph of attempting to rape her, and Joseph was thrown into prison. As Joseph is now in the prison in Egypt, that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, and that word officers, as I told you before, is the Hebrew word for eunuch. It would seem that all of those who were placed in any position around the Pharaoh and all were required to be eunuchs. It's interesting that that did not happen to Joseph. The chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. So, as we were mentioning this morning, if anybody had a right to question the providential care of God for his children, if any man had a right to question the goodness of God, it was Joseph. Joseph lived an exemplary life. His brothers, pretty rotten. Very rotten. And Joseph reported some of the incidents that his brothers were doing to the dad, and they actually began to hate him. And then when Joseph was sent by his father to visit his brothers, as they saw him coming, they decided to kill him. And then they opted to sell him as a slave to some slave traders headed for Egypt. When he came to Egypt, he was sold to Potiphar, the captain of the guard, head over Pharaoh's army, where he became a very entrusted servant. In fact, Potiphar placed everything he had under Joseph's jurisdiction. But then this occasion, where Potiphar's wife desired Joseph, sought to entice him. When her seduction was not successful, she then tried to force him into bed with her. And he fled out of the house. And she, seeing that she was scorned, began to scream rape. And the servants came in, and she accused Joseph of attempting to rape her, and then repeated the lie to her husband. And Joseph was thrown into prison in Egypt. He was 17 years old when his brothers sold him to the slave traders. He probably was in Potiphar's house as a servant for 10 years. And then was probably in prison for a year before the butler and the baker got tossed into jail. And after their experience, he was there for 2 more years. So that by the time he finally was brought out to the Pharaoh to interpret the dream, he was 30 years old. 13 valuable years of his life have passed in slavery and in prison, all because of the dastardly actions of his brothers, the heartless action of selling their brother as a slave. And Joseph could very well, in those 13 years, challenge the goodness of God. Where is God in all of these things? If God is so good, then why, when I've only tried to do what was right, when I was resisting temptation, why would God allow me to be imprisoned because of the false accusations of this hussy? And he had all of this time of his life that, if you were living it with him day by day, would seem like, my life is being wasted away. I'm growing old and I don't have a chance to live. But Joseph maintained his integrity and his faith in God in spite of all of the obstacles. When this woman sought to seduce him, he said, how can I do this great wickedness against God? Sin against God. And he was conscious of God, even though it would appear that God had forsaken him. God allowed his brothers to sell him as a slave. And yet he was still aware and conscious of God and lived in that consciousness of God. Thrown into prison. He is a model prisoner. Finally, they have more or less placed him in charge over the prison. And he is running the prison. When the butler and the baker came into disfavor of the Pharaoh. Now, it could be, and this is only supposition, it could be that they discovered some poison and realized that someone was out to poison the king. And the two likely suspects were the butler and the baker. The butler maybe is going to put the poison in the king's cup. Or maybe the baker is going to put it in the pastries. Whatever the cause, these two men were thrown into prison. And in prison, they came under Joseph's scrutiny and Joseph's supervision. Because the keeper of the prison had placed everything into Joseph's care. So the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and Joseph served them, so they were in custody for a while under Joseph's jurisdiction. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, dreamed a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came into them in the morning, and he looked at them, and he saw how that they were sad. Joseph was a very observant man. He had charge of these men. He saw that they were dejected. And he said, what's wrong with you guys? What's the matter with you? Why do you look so sad, dejected today? And they said to him, we've each of us had a dream, and we have no one to interpret it for us. And Joseph said, don't the interpretations belong to God? You see, still, after a year or more in prison, there is that consciousness and awareness of God. Even though all of these obstacles seem to be against him and mitigate against the goodness of God, still, he is aware of God. And don't interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. So the chief butler told his dream to Joseph, and he said, in my dream there was a vine that had three branches. And it budded and had blossoms and clusters of ripe grapes. And so I was picking these grapes and I was squeezing them into the cup and I carried the cup to the king. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. And in 3 days, the Pharaoh will restore your position to you, and you will bear the cup to the Pharaoh once again. But remember me when you get there. Tell the Pharaoh about me. Tell him that bum rap that I've got. This woman accused me and didn't do anything wrong. Remember me to the Pharaoh. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. And also I have done nothing that they should put me in this dungeon. I'm innocent. I was kidnapped. I was taken away from my own people, kidnapped, and thrown in this dungeon. So tell the Pharaoh about me. Now when the chief baker saw that it was a pretty good interpretation, he said to Joseph, in my dream, I had 3 white baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket, there were all kinds of baked goods for the Pharaoh. And the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. So Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. And within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree. And the birds will eat your flesh. Now it came to pass on the 3rd day, happened to be the Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all of his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now, Joseph probably had a glimmer of hope. When this guy gets to the Pharaoh and tells him my story, surely the Pharaoh will, you know, pardon me and I'll split for home. I'll get back, you know, I'll get back to my father and all. And that's exactly what God didn't want him doing. God didn't want him going home. God had a task for him to do here in Egypt. And so God allowed the butler to forget him, though he had a very unforgettable experience. And for 2 years, Joseph continued there in the prison, forgotten by the butler. And again, how time seems to drag when we are in miserable or uncomfortable circumstances. An hour can seem like an eternity in the right circumstances, or the wrong circumstances, I probably should say. You know, they say that Einstein discovered relativity, or at least made the formula for it, and that according to the calculations that time is relative. Speed and so forth go into the dimension of time. Well, I could have told you time was relative, and I don't have, you know, that kind of a brain at all. When I'm doing something I enjoy, time whizzes by. When I used to practice the violin an hour a day, time drug, believe me. man, that after I practiced violin, I'd go out and play ball. And man, before you knew it, it was dark. I mean, time flew out playing ball. But it just drug playing the violin. You do something you enjoy, time flies. Do something you don't care too much about, and time has a way of really dragging. Well, imagine Joseph now. For 2 years longer in the prison. Time dragging on, the days into weeks, the weeks into months, the months into years. Where is God? I can believe that Joseph had been praying the whole while that God would free him. That God would plead his case. That God would work in his behalf. He trusted in God. But it seemed like heaven was silent, that God was deaf. And surely he had a right to challenge the goodness of God, the love of God. But the story wasn't yet complete. It's hard for us to get the full impact of this because we know the end of the story. If you would close the book right here at the end of chapter 39, say, boy, what a sad thing. He's forgotten. There he is. Tragic. You could easily jump to the conclusion that God is not fair, that God is not good, that God is not loving. When you see the rest of the story and you see it unfolding as it begins to unfold in chapter 41 and then further unfolds in 42, as you see the unfolding of the story, then you say, God is so good and God is so wise and God is so smart, you know, and you have a whole different concept of God when you see the total story. Now, that's where the big problem lies. As we are in the midst of our trials, we can't see the whole story. And pretty soon, when the boys come home to Jacob, and they say, man, we've met a fella down there in Egypt, and is he rough? He kept one of our brothers in his jail down there. Because we told him we had a younger brother. He said, we're lying to him. We're nothing but spies. And we came down to spy out Egypt. And we said, no, we're all brothers. We have one father. And he said, well, do you have any other brothers at home? We said, yeah, we have one, you know, younger brother. He said, I don't believe it. I'll keep one of you as a hostage here. Man, was he mean. And the only way we can get our brother out is to take Benjamin back. And Jacob said, no way, you're not going to take him back. I've already lost Joseph and I'm not taking any chances with Benjamin. So when they ran out of the grain that they had bought in Egypt, Jacob said, hey boys, you better go down to Egypt and get some more grain. They said, are you kidding? I'm not going to go down and see that guy again. He's mean. We told you he's mean. Downright mean. And he said that we won't even see his face unless we have our younger brother. Jacob said, well, you can't take him. They said, well, we've got to take him. And Jacob then said, all things are against me. You see, he didn't see the full story. He only saw a part of the story, and he made his judgment by just seeing an incomplete story. No, Jacob, all things are not against you. You would be amazed what God is doing, Jacob. Do you know that in a few days, you'll be hugging Joseph, eating at his table, and you'll see the glory that God has bestowed upon him in Egypt? But only seeing part of the picture, you say, oh, everything's against me. And whenever you're prone in your circumstances to cry, oh, everything is against me, God is against me, God doesn't love me, if God loved me, why? Just know That your problem is you don't see the whole story yet. You have an incomplete novel here. God is working. God is good. God does love you. And God is even working in these adverse circumstances, His plan and His will for your life. And when the cycle is complete, and when you see the total story, you'll say, oh, but God is so good. Oh, He's so wise. His works are so marvelous. So don't make your judgment until all of the facts are in. Because you might find yourself embarrassed trying to explain to God how sorry you are for those rotten things you said of Him and said to Him in the midst of your adversity. To me, it is a notable thing that Job, in all of the adversity that he faced, it says he did not curse God, neither did he charge God foolishly. Now, there may be no temptation to curse God. I mean, that's a pretty heavy thing. A man gets so embroiled in his problems that he actually curses God. That I think, is beyond your capacity. But charging God foolishly, that's something else, isn't it? What is it to charge God foolishly? God doesn't love me. If God loved me, then why would this happen to me? I don't think that God cares for me at all. I don't think that God is interested in me. I think that God has forgotten all about me. That's charging God foolishly. But we sometimes do that because we are making our judgments on incomplete data. We don't know the whole story. Now, in chapter 41, the story begins to emerge. It came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river, that is the Nile River. And suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine-looking, fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly, gaunt. And they stood by the other cows on the bank of the river, and the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking and fat cows. And Pharaoh woke up. And then he went back to sleep, and he dreamed a second time. And suddenly 7 heads of grain, you read corn, but you think then of our, you know, type of corn on the cob that we eat. The wheat grows also in a little sort of a head, and they used to call it the corn of wheat. It's that little head of wheat, actually. And so it's really talking about the grain and the wheat here. 7 heads of grain came up on one stalk. They were plump and good. Then behold, 7 thin heads blighted by the east wind sprang up after them, and the 7 thin heads devoured the 7 plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. It was like a nightmare, but he was really shook. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all of the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Now, these fellows that Pharaoh is calling are pretty sharp fellows, you know. Later on, when Moses goes into the Pharaoh to demand the release of the children of Israel, you remember that Moses took his rod and threw it down, and the rod turned into a serpent. And the Pharaoh's magicians, what did they do? They threw their rods down too, and they turned into serpents. These guys had some pretty powerful demonic stuff going for them. Moses' serpent ate up all their serpents, but greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. But these guys were really into the magical arts. I mean, these guys were into the occult. They were into Satanism. They were into the spirit realm. And they probably were able to interpret dreams that came from the satanic realm. But this dream came from God and they were at a loss. You're crossing a spiritual barrier here. And they're at a loss to interpret the dream. And then the chief butler said to Pharaoh, I remember my faults today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants, and he put me in the custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each dreamed a dream one night, he and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream, and it came to pass just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him. And so suddenly, 2 years later, when the Pharaoh is troubled by this dream, no one able to interpret it. Suddenly, God brought into mind Joseph, to the mind of this butler. God's timing is now perfect. God's plan is ready now to go into operation. It was for this reason that God put in the minds of Joseph's brothers that evil thought to sell him as a slave. It was for this reason that that woman set her eyes upon Joseph and cried rape when he refused to be seduced. It was for this reason that Joseph has spent time in jail in order that he might meet the butler. And that's the reason why the Pharaoh was angry with the butler, to get him in jail, that he might meet Joseph. God is behind the scenes working out his plan all the way along. Even as God is behind the scenes in your life, if you're a child of God, and he's working out details and plans of which you know nothing at all, but one day when you see the fruition, you'll say, wow. Do you realize that if we hadn't been there at that time, we wouldn't have met them, and if we had not met them, then this and this and this, You see how God has been working even when you didn't know it, even when you weren't aware of it. God is controlling the circumstances of our lives. You remember when Daniel came into that drunken Belshazzar again to interpret the writing on the wall. And Daniel, before he interpreted the writing, gave him a lecture, a stern lecture, concerning the true and the living God. The God, he said, in whose hand your very breath is. You are so close to God. And God so governs over your life that in his hand is your very breath. When Paul stood amidst the Greek philosophers, the Epicureans, there on Mars Hill, standing above the forum down below, the agora, the marketplace, where you could see the great temples on either end, Juno and Athena. And up above you could see that great temple built on the Acropolis there. And Paul said, You are very religious people. I've been going through your streets. I've been observing your worship. I've seen all of the altars that you have. And as I was walking down the street there in the marketplace, I saw an altar and it was inscribed to the unknown God. I'd like to tell you about that God. He is the God who created the whole universe. And in Him we live and we move and we have our being. God is working out details and circumstances in your life. Jesus said there's not a sparrow that falls to the ground, but what your Father isn't aware of it. Now, if your Father is that aware of sparrows, how much more is He aware of you and the situations of your life? One thing that Jesus taught us, and that is God's complete concern for man. With the very intricate details of man. Such trivia as how many hair there are on your head. God knows your life fully and completely. And God is bringing about the circumstances of your life. And now with Joseph, we're about to see the plan of God unfolding, and we'll begin now to understand a little bit better as we get to this stage, as we get to this chapter. Now we begin to understand a little bit of the hardship and of the grief and the sorrow and the problems that he faced earlier on in his life. So Pharaoh sent and he called Joseph. And they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved. Actually, it was an abomination not to be shaved in those days in Egypt. If you would appear before the Pharaoh, there is a code that you should be shaved to appear before Pharaoh. So he shaved and changed his clothes. And he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I've dreamed a dream. There's no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that you can understand dreams to interpret them." And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It's not in me, but God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." Now, here again, and we find it so many places through the scripture, these men that were so used of God were men who were never willing to take credit for the gift of God. Yes, he was anointed of God. He had a gift of God. Yes, he could interpret dreams by the power of God. But he wasn't about to take credit for that power himself. It's not in me. When Daniel was brought before Nebuchadnezzar to interpret his dream, same thing. Nebuchadnezzar said to Daniel, "I understand you can interpret dreams." And Daniel said, "Nah, you've got it wrong, King. I can't interpret dreams. But there's a God in heaven who knows everything. And he is able to give you the understanding of your dream." Giving God the credit for what God has done. Oh, that we would learn to do it. It's such a shame today. A disgrace today. So many people going around taking bows for what God has done. Well, we discovered this formula and we'll be glad to train you and teach you how you too can be a great success. You know, just put down your money and we'll make a success out of you. We've got the formulas. We've got the answers. And man is so willing to take credit for what God has done. Take glory. Stand up and take the bows. But not these men. "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh the answer of peace." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Behold in my dream," and he repeated his dream to Joseph. How he was standing on the bank of the river, saw the seven fat cows, the seven skinny ones. and the gaunt ones, and how they ate up the fat ones, and the same with the wheat. And so Joseph said to Pharaoh, verse 25, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. There's one interpretation for both dreams. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. God has placed in the heart of kings his mind, his will. Interesting that that's exactly what God did to Nebuchadnezzar. And both of these men were pagan kings. Yet God spoke to them in dreams, revealing the future and what God was about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years. The seven good ears or heads are the 7 years, and the dreams are one. The seven thin and the ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years. The seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Indeed, there will be 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all of the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. So Daniel now lays out for the king exactly what's going to be happening. God has shown you the future. The next 14 years, God has laid out before you. They'll be divided in two. 7 years will be plenty. Going to be a bumper crop. It's going to be years of abundance. But it will be followed by 7 years of drought, 7 years of famine, and the famine will be so great that all of the abundance of the 7 good years will be used up, eaten up. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. And let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. Now, as a general rule, the people were taxed 10%. But Joseph is suggesting that during this time of surplus, that the government taxed them 20% during this time of surplus, so that they might gather a large surplus to see them through the lean years that were coming. Let them gather all of the food of those good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of the Pharaoh, and let them keep the food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, and the land may not perish during the famine. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all of his servants. They said, wow, that's a great idea, good plan. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this man, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? They recognized that there was a quality in Daniel that set him above the crowd. Thank you, Joseph. He wasn't an ordinary person. He had gone through 13 years of severe testing, trial, hardship. And still, there was that quality about him. Why? Because of the Spirit of God. And it was recognized. Oh, what a difference the Spirit of God makes in our lives. How we need the Spirit of God in control in our lives. Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? Inasmuch as God has shown you all of this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house and over all my people. They will be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Man, talk about rags to riches. Prison to praise. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring and put it on Joseph's hand. Man, that's the authority. Wherever you go, that signet ring, that's the authority of the king. That's the authority of the government. And he gave it to Joseph. And he clothed him in garments of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried out before him, bow the knee. So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah. It means the revealer of secrets. And he gave him as his wife Aseneth, the daughter of Potipharah, who was the priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt, and Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, there are many similitudes between Joseph and Jesus. And if you want to really go into the typology studies, you will find that Joseph becomes a very interesting type of Jesus Christ. Joseph was sent by his father to his brothers, even as Jesus was sent by the Father to his people. But his brothers despised him and sold him, even as Jesus was rejected by his own, sold by Judas. The brothers threw him into a pit, even as Jesus was sent into Hades. Joseph was brought up out of the jail, out of the dungeon, to stand before Pharaoh, even as Jesus arose from the dead and ascended to the Father. Joseph was then given great authority, even as Jesus has been given great authority. All power is given unto me. Here Joseph was 30 years old when he began his ministry over Egypt, even as Jesus was 30 years old when he began his public ministry. And on and on and on, you can find many, many types. Pink's book on gleanings from Genesis, I think, lists 60 or so types. Dr. J. Vernon McGee, in his commentary on Genesis, gives you 28 or so types. And you can follow it through and you can see many similarities here. So he went out from the presence of the Pharaoh, and he went throughout all the land of Egypt, and in the 7 plentiful years, and the ground brought forth abundantly, so he gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt. He laid up the food in the cities, and he laid up in every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. So in key cities, he gathered together the food from the farm areas round about. And Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea, until he finally stopped counting, for it was without number, just an abundance of grain, super crops. And to Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of the famine. Now you have 7 good years, so he was 13 years from the time he was sold by his brothers to the time that he was appointed now over the land. 7 more years until the famine began. So his brothers probably came down maybe at the end of the first year of famine. So at a time of perhaps 21 years lapsing between Joseph's being sold by his brothers and then meeting them again when they came down to Egypt to buy grain. And by that time, Joseph is 37, 38 years old. The last time they saw him, he was just a stripling kid, 17 years. That's why the brothers didn't recognize him. But while he was in these 7 good years collecting everything, God gave him a couple of sons. And the firstborn he called Manasseh, which means making forgetful. For God has caused me to forget all of the toil, those bad years, those years in prison, those years as a slave. God has caused me to forget all of those years of toil, forgetting Manasseh. It is an interesting thing the Bible speaks about when we get to heaven, that the former things will not be brought into mind. The years of toil, the years of struggle, the years of trying and testing won't be brought into mind when we are there. There'll be so much more of the glory that we won't even be concerned about the past. The name of the second he called Ephraim, which means fruitfulness. For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of affliction. And again, a very beautiful phrase. God has caused me to forget all my toil, all my father's house, and he has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. So, come here, forgetfulness. Come on over here, fruitful. Sit down in your daddy's lap, you know. Every time he called his kids, he was reminded of God's goodness and God's blessings, what God had done for him. Then the 7 years of plenty, which were in the land of Egypt, ended. The 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. And the famine was in all of the lands. But in all of the land of Egypt there was bread. So when the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Then Pharaoh said to the Egyptians, "Go on over to Joseph, whatever he says to you, do." And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. And the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all of the countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all of the lands. And so God now brings his brothers to him. They're going to do obeisance to him, even as God is going to ultimately bring Israel around, and they will recognize Jesus as their Messiah, and they will bow their knee, and they will declare that Jesus is the Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Next week, I think it's one of my favorite chapters of the Old Testament. I love this portion of the story. There's just so much emotion in it. And so we'll have an exciting time next week as Joseph's brothers come down to buy grain. This is just, boy, the perfect one, you know. I love it. Joseph isn't totally without a mischievous bent and a desire to get even. He carries out his part very well in this, and I enjoy it every time I read it. Again, let me encourage you to wait on the Lord. Be of good cheer. Though your path may have led you into the valley, and you're going through deep water, and at the present time you may not yet see your way out, if you're a child of God, His hand will lead you. He will sustain you. He will bring you forth with shouts of joy and victory as you see the full cycle of God's plan worked out in your life. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean to your own understanding. It can lead you astray, you see, because you don't have sufficient data yet. There's more to the story. Don't close the book. Don't end the chapter and stop there. Wait for God to bring you into that next chapter where the solution to the puzzle lies. And see the unfolding grace of God in your life and the goodness of God day after day until you say, "Oh, God is so good."